Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight. Every color of day. Whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome everybody on this miserable, rainy, nasty, nasty night on this June 3rd, 2007 to the 223rd episode of Dave's Gone By. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, theater critic, publisher, and all sorts of other weird things that are coming together in a very, very busy time these couple of weeks. So I'm very happy to be here at WGBB, and I'm going to be here not just tonight, but tomorrow night, and I'll tell you all about that. We've got so much going on, a little bit crazy, so let me just explain a few things. First of all, you're listening to Dave's Gone By, which has been on this station since October 2002. As I said, we're well past 200 episodes at this point. A weekly program of comedy and music and talk and radio, and hope you've been enjoying it. And we're sponsored by some very fine people, including Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. It's the Bible of Broadway, and it's been around, I'm proud because this show has been on the air for 4.5 years. Performing Arts Insider Magazine has been around for 64 years. This thing was around literally before World War II was over, and people were choosing what to see on Broadway to celebrate that the war was ending. And you open up the magazine, and you see what's opening, what's closing, who's going into shows, and especially nowadays, how to contact the agents and the managers of the actors and the directors and the tech people. It's a real inside kind of theater magazine, Performing Arts Insider, which, pardon me, you can find out more about at performingartsinsider.com. There's also Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Now, this is a different kind of Broadway from Performing Arts Insider. This is Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island, because Hewlett Minuteman Press is right next to the new Lohmann's Shoe Store, right across the street from the old Lohmann's, right on Broadway in Hewlett. And why should you go all the way there? Well, if you're right next to it, you go there because it's right there. But why should you single out Hewlett Minuteman Press for your copying and printing and binding jobs? Because they're good people. It's a family-run business for almost 30 years now. And if you tell them that you listen to Dave's Gone By, they will give you 10% off your job at Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Also, want to thank MortgagesRock.com. They are rocking those mortgages, ladies and gentlemen. It isn't just about a place to go if you need to refinance a mortgage, buy a new house, maybe get a college loan or a loan to fix up the place you've got. You can do that at MortgagesRock.com. They're a financing company. But what you can also do is go to their website and learn how to do mortgages. There are people there. It's an actual office, and they will go through the steps with you, teach you the business, and once you learn it, you start earning commission. The more you learn, the more you earn, and you can help your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues get mortgages as well. And we are also sponsored by, and I mean, there could not be better timing for us to do our fourth sponsor, because here he is, ladies and gentlemen, grabbing the red microphone, my erstwhile and usual co-host, Jeffrey Goodman, who is the owner and operator of
A Very Wet Fancy Schmancy Glooms.
Yeah, Jeff literally, like, in through the door, soaked to the gills, literally just getting from the car to
Let's see. Well, the car is actually over that way now, because I was not parking in the back.
Good, because apparently there's like some light broken in the back, and you couldn't see your way here anyway. So if your car doesn't float away down Sunrise Highway, I think we'll be in good shape.
There were animals 2x2 on Sunrise Highway. What does that mean?
I don't know. Bum, bum. Thank you so much. Jeff Goodman, how you doing? Aside from wet.
Okay.
What? Oh, yeah, you just look so thrown into the line.
I'm not excited. It's Tom Waits night.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that part of what we're
going
to do.
I'm proud of everything, all the other bad news I had for me.
Oh, you woke the show right up.
I get to hear Tom Waits sing all night tonight.
See, you're not doing it well because you actually sound like a soprano compared to Tom Waits.
You got to go
down here! Like, there, that's Tom Waits.
Okay.
What we're going to be doing on this program, aside from Inside Broadway, our weekly look at what's happening on Broadway. You know, we've got the Tonys coming up in less than a week.
And don't we have something tomorrow night?
Yes. That's the other big news. I mean, as I said, there's so much going on. Let me.
It hardly pays to turn your dial off WGBB.
Really? Well,
listen to some Chinese tomorrow.
There's 6 hours of gospel tonight and then 12 hours of Chinese people talking. And then I will be back here on this radio station. I'll be running the board
from
6 o'clock on.
And then we'll quiz the listeners on how to order Chinese food in Chinese.
Let's not go there. There were radio people fired for making fun of Chinese restaurants. Let us not go there at all.
Okay.
We're going to be very good, especially over the next 24 hours. We're not going to be negative. We're not going to say
I'm
nasty
not negative
things. Oh, I am. But we're going to
where
be
where do I like to go every year?
Behavior.
Every year. And where did I come back from this year? China.
Oh, well.
And Thailand, I go every year. I love Asia.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying.
I'm just making fun of our format.
Okay. We have a format?
Well,
it's been 4.5 years. I know we had a format. Oh, you mean the radio station? Yeah.
The Chinese to English format.
But what we're doing on tonight's show, and I'll prep everything. I'll tell everybody all the things that they've got to be listening to. We're going to be doing Inside Broadway, again, telling you about Broadway news and the Tonys coming up, and I'll be reviewing a couple of shows, including one that's closing in about a week called Spalding Gray Stories Left to Tell, which is a good show that you should really make tracks to see this week before it closes.
What's Spalding?
Well, it's been running for a few months.
Oh.
And then we're also going to say goodbye to Charles Nelson Reilly, who died past Sunday, but I didn't find out about it until we were already off the air. So, got to give him his props. We have a little interview, not that I did with him, but a recorded thing, and also a little piece of him doing how to succeed in business without really trying. And then after we do our Broadway stuff, we go into some Tom Waits time.
Oh, God.
Because I read a book about him called Wild Years, the Crazy Life and Times of Tom Waits, by, let's see, where's the author of that?
Wait here for it.
Jay Jacobs. And he's an appreciator. It's an unauthorized biography of Waits, but it's quite positive. And he talked to a lot of the people in Waits' inner circle, like producer Bones Howe and some of the musicians that he dealt with. And so I don't think he talked to Ricky Lee Jones, but he put together a basic chronology of Waits' life. And I love his music so much that we'll play a bit of it and we'll hear about the book from
just
Jay
to
Jacobs.
Make me upset.
Just to make Jeff upset. Well, I promise you, one day something will click in your mind and you'll realize how great Tom Waits is, even if it's from other people singing his songs. But there will be a moment when the light bulb will go on and you'll go like, oh, he's truly sensational. All right, we'll see. And the last thing I wanted to get to before we have to do our commercials and get to Inside Broadway is follow up on something that was supposed to happen a couple of weeks ago, didn't happen. I was all kind of teed off last week about it, and I want to give the final kind of the closure on this. A couple of weeks ago, our guest on the program, it was a Mother's Day show, and we had two kind of sides of different coins here that we were going to be doing for Mother's Day. We had an author of a very fun, zany, fictional book about her nonfiction experiences with parents who are getting their kids into these high-level schools and the crazy things they go to, and she was really fun. And then the second half of the program on Mother's Day was going to be devoted to Cindy Sheehan. She is the woman who lost her son in Iraq and became the most famous anti-Iraq war protester. She's the one who kept trying to get an audience with, like he's the Pope or something, trying to get an audience with President Bush, tried to camp out on his lawn, got arrested for wearing a T-shirt at one point. I had all these things to ask her, and was going to give her this chance to vent about the president, especially now that the whole country swung against him onto her side on the issue anyway. Well, she never called. They never called to apologize. A week goes by.
But now we know why?
Well, I called them, and I spoke to her assistant a week ago or so, and this first gave this kind of apology of, like, well, she thought it was 11:30 in the morning and not 11:30 at night, and Cindy's overseas, and blah, blah. And the assistant sounded really kind of harried and upset about something. She said she had a family crisis and whatever. I said, okay. And she said, keep us in mind for future interviews. And I said, sure, and bye.
Good.
Because
so
I
not,
did not.
You're not mad? Are you mad at, still mad at Cindy Sheehan or no?
Well, you know what happened.
She didn't call.
Right. But a week after this, she was in the news again. Oh, see, I love when I surprise Jeff with news. Because I get to, he's like the audience here. I can look at him and think of all of you listening and surprise you all with news. Cindy Sheehan has given up. She has taken her marbles and gone home. She's a California mother. I'm reading this from CNN News from a few days back. Became an anti-war leader after her son was killed in Iraq. She declared she was walking away from the peace movement. She said her son died, quote, for nothing. She achieved national attention, blah, 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 when she camped outside his home and the president's home in Crawford, Texas, to demand a meeting with him. The vigil that she kept when he refused made her a national figure. But in a web diary posted to the liberal online community Daily Kos on Monday ago, Sheehan said she was exhausted by the personal, financial, and emotional toll of the past 2 years. She wrote she's disillusioned by the failure of the Democratic politicians to bring the unpopular war to an end, and she was tired of a peace movement that she said, quote, often puts personal egos above peace and human life.
And she couldn't announce this on our show?
Yeah, right. We were going to have a scoop. We were going to make national news, but no. No, Cindy has to take another week to think about it and then quit. Thanks, Cindy. You know, and I'm sorry.
Well,
if she's so naive that she thinks that Democrats are that much better or thought that they were so much better than the Republicans.
But we'll forgive her, won't we? Won't we, Dave? We'll call her up on Dave's Gone By and console her.
No. But I will forgive her on the condition that I'll assume she thought it was 11:30 in the morning and got her times messed up. That's a legitimate mistake.
Okay, well, we forgive you, Cindy Sheehan, anyway.
And I'm sorry she went. Yeah, you know, I can't blame her for being disillusioned with both parties. That's the reason that, like an idiot, I voted for Ralph Nader 15 or 10 years ago, like a schmuck, because he convinced me that both parties were the same. Ha. But, you know, you can't bang your own drum and beat your own drummer on everything.
Can I finish?
Go ahead, yeah.
No, that's Ross Perot.
Oh.
Who also...
Well, you know what? At least he was a third party, a legitimate third party that
anyway. That didn't get anywhere anyway.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't see this little part. You know, the stuff about her speaking engagement,
and she apologized
medical bills.
To you.
She said, quote, I plan to spend the rest of my life making it up to Dave Lefkowitz and Jeff Goodman for missing their show.
There you go.
Unquote. So we made it on to CNN. Thank you, Cindy, for that. Okay. All's forgiven, at least in our fictional universe here on Dave's Gone By. We'll be back to our own private planet right after these messages. What's black and white and red all over? Photocopies made at Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Any job that you have, including black and white copies, and they've got a brand new color copier, great quality, good prices, wonderful family that has owned Hewlett Minuteman Press since the 1970s. So check them out, 516-569-5577, Hewlett Minuteman Press. They're the kings. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Your mic's on. So is mine. Yes, Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. We do news, we do reviews, and tonight we'll also be doing a goodbye on Inside Broadway. Well, actually, we'll even start with a goodbye, because, go figure, a show that I reviewed last week on this program.
Which turned out not to be a goodbye.
Well, a good BUY,
right?
Because that was my problem. It was like $55 plus a two-drink minimum for a little... I mean, with some famous people in it, but it was essentially just an improv show. No better than you can go see Chicago City Limits for $15 and have the same.
Well, they
time.
Have a two-drink minimum, too.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Okay. Then, all right, maybe you get out of Chicago City Limits with a $30 tab instead of an $80 tab. All I'm saying is, for what you paid and the whole atmosphere, don't quit your night job There's a reason they quit their night job. So, and that was the main thing. It was the first venture of Jed Bernstein after he left the League of American Theaters and Producers. He was running them for about 10 years. So I'm sure, like, the enemies he made there are going, I wonder how much he lost.
Do you think he made a lot of enemies? He was a nice guy.
I was not an enemy. I thought he was a good... There was something a little bit cold about him, but he was also very good, and I thought he made a big difference as far as bringing Broadway outside of New York and touring and things like that. But obviously he has a few things still left to learn about producing. So that closed... closing actually tomorrow. You've got one more opportunity to see Don't Quit Your Night Job. Probably they've got a lot of famous people coming tomorrow in the cast. So
go tomorrow.
Yeah, go tomorrow. Here's the lineup for next season at the Atlantic Theater Company. Now, these are the guys, they had a big couple of years. They gave us Lieutenant of Inishmore, they gave us Spring Awakening, a couple of other things, the Boise Inheritance they did this past year. Well, here's what's coming up, a little bit more far afield on their 2006-2007 season. They're doing a play called Scarcity by Lucy Thurber. They're doing a play called Trumpery by Peter Parnell, who has... He was making a big name for himself like 20 years ago, and then barely heard from. He did the adaptation of Cider House Rules for the stage about a decade ago on something called Hyde in Hollywood, which was his first famous play. And it's nice to see his name back. But it's interesting that they have one play called Scarcity and another called Trumpery. So, well, maybe it's not that interesting. And a play called Port Authority. And that's by Connor McPherson, the guy who wrote The Weir and Shining City. And they're also doing a Jez Butterworth play called Parlor Song. He's the guy who wrote Mojo and The Night Heron. You're looking at me so blankly. And I'm sure people are staring at their radios going,
what?
Uh-huh.
But I have some news, too.
What?
I'm very excited about what the Roundabout is bringing into the Studio 54 next.
Now, that was my next thing. Go.
Very excited. Finally, someone is doing a good revival of the Ritz.
Well, we hope it's a good revival.
Look at the cast.
Who's in the cast, Jeff Goodman?
I'm trying to remember, and I can't remember. It was Rosie
Perez as Googie Gomez, of course.
Fantastic casting.
Uh-huh.
And who's playing...
I have to go... Here it is. Okay. It's the... The Ritz will also star Kevin Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah.
He's lovable.
Terrific.
He's from Seussical. He's a big guy.
Yeah, you have to be a big guy to do that.
And I don't know who the other person is yet, but that's opening in October at Studio
54. The other Jerry Stiller part was not exactly a big part.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever see The Ritz?
I never saw The Ritz.
It is one of the most hilarious. It's one of Terrence McNally's earliest plays on Broadway.
And it has to do with someone hiding out in a gay bathhouse?
Well, what he does is it's a man who was running away from his father-in-law, who on his deathbed said he wanted him dead.
Oops.
So he was in the garbage collection business.
Uh-huh.
So he ran into what he thought was a Turkish bathhouse, but he realized...
It's more like a Greek bathhouse, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, so he ends up...
He goes in the back way.
It turns out that the cab driver brings him to a gay bathhouse.
Okay, yeah.
And hijinks ensue.
He
doesn't really pretend to be a producer, but he sort of pretends because he knows someone.
And it's a place to hide out.
And Googie Gomez is an aspiring performer with marginal talent, as it were.
It's funny. I remember the name Googie Gomez. I never realized it came from this play.
Oh, yeah.
So that's Terrence McNally's The Ritz.
I cannot wait. Cool. If they don't let me in, I'm buying tickets.
I'm sure they'll be very happy to hear that.
That's yes.
Now, Terrence McNally, by the way, is the fella. He's got a not-so-great play on Broadway right now called Deuce, but he's also the fella who wrote Love, Valor, Compassion,
Masterclass. He wrote Some Men this year. Some Men.
Yes, that's right. Off-Broadway, correct. And most famous probably for Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune.
And he also wrote the books to many musicals.
Musicals, that's right.
He wrote the book to...
Help.
What's the one that opened up the...
Not Kiss of the Spider Woman, was it? Or
yes, he did write the book to Kiss of the... He adapted the book
of
Kiss of the Spider. But also Ragtime. He got a Tony for Ragtime.
Okay. So yes, it's Terrence McNally. And by the way, the Roundabout also announced another show that it's going to be opening next season. They're going to be doing a revival. I don't know, I'm not excited about this yet. Pygmalion. Do we really need to see George Bernard Shaw as Pygmalion again? That's also opening October.
Everyone's going to go, oh, it's My Fair Lady without the music.
October it's at not. The American Airlines Theater with Jefferson Mays.
Because he's Higgins. Soon to be out of a job.
What, because there's no more touring of I Am My Own Wife? Or?
No, he's in...
Oh, Journey's End, that's right. He won the Tony for I Am My Own Wife, but he's been in Journey's End. That wonderful cast. And please, you only have one more week to see Journey's End before that closes on Tony night. Go see it.
Ironically.
Because it will probably win the best play
How
Tony.
Would they close it on Tony night if it really is up in... Seriously up in the running. Why would they do that?
Because they've been hemorrhaging money. You could shoot moose in the balcony. I mean, it's just empty. And maybe... It would occur to me that you leave it open one more week to see if you sell tickets at the Tony.
That's what I would think.
I mean, I remember there was a Paula Vogel play that closed the week before, or the very week it won the Pulitzer Prize. And people were going, like, why? But the theater was booked and it couldn't move. Or it was either that or it was the play Wit. One of those. And just sometimes circumstances...
No, Wit ran for quite a while.
Yeah, but by the time it had sort of come to the end of it... It might have been How I Learned to Drive. But it won a while, and then it won the award. Mm-hmm. You know? But remember, everybody, the Tony Awards happening June 10th. That's next
a week
Sunday
from today.
Night. In fact, once we go on the air here next weekend,
it's
next
over.
Sunday, it's over. We'll do a recap, and we'll see what won and what didn't, and we'll have some fun doing that.
Which means Jeff will be late next week.
Well, yeah, because he'll be coming from watching the Tony Awards. And then the CBS After Show, so you'll probably wander in here at about 5 to midnight.
That's right.
But here's something else really important to keep in mind, and you alluded to this before. Tomorrow night on WGBB, this radio station, AM 1240 on your dial, AM 1240, WGBB.com on your internet dial, WGBB's third annual Tony Awards special. Hosted by myself, Dave Lefkowitz.
It's a spectacular, Dave.
Co-hosted by Jeff Goodman and Simon Saltzman, who is the president of the Outer Critics Circle.
Woo-hoo. And he is driving it from Jersey.
He is, with his lovely wife, Lucy Ann. She's going to be on hand. She goes to all the shows with him as well. We have a roster of critics.
But I still get the red mic, right?
Yeah, you get the... if he has a softer voice, he might get the red mic, because that's the strongest mic.
Oh.
We'll have to see. Anyway, critics from theatermania.com, a Connecticut critic we've got coming in.
I hear a real Jewish critic from up from 99th Street.
Who's that?
Charles Gross.
Oh, Charlie Gross, of course, your co-host on Two on the Isle will be calling in. And thank you both, by the way, for having me on your guys' Manhattan Cable TV Tony show. I keep looking for it on YouTube. I guess Charlie hasn't posted it yet. But check this week, everybody, YouTube, Two on the Isle. And you'll see Charlie, Jeff, and myself giving our Tony pricks and predictions, our picks as well as our pricks and predictions.
Hang on.
And you got to make the best jokes you can at this hour. So the main thing is that tomorrow night from 7 until 10 on WGBB, we will be here giving all our picks, going through all the categories. I'll be playing songs from all the nominated musicals.
They'll be dancing. They'll be singing.
You know what? Mary Poppins, Spring Awakening. We'll be doing Grey Gardens. A couple of the off-Broadway shows, In the Heights will be featuring. And we have two Tony nominees.
We got a second one.
We got the choreographer of Spring Awakening, Bill T. Jones, and one of the most lovely and beloved actresses in Broadway musical theater, Rebecca Luker. Now, what is 6 degrees of Rebecca Luker with us?
Well, we had her husband on last year.
That's right. The last Tony show, Danny Burstyn.
How'd you get her to do it?
Well, I bet, you know.
You begged her?
I traded sex for no, I kid. I begged a press agent.
You had sex with a husband? What's the deal with that?
No, I don't think so. Thank you very much.
Danny, sorry.
So I'm really excited. It's going to be an amazing show.
But he is about for.
Tomorrow night, 7 to 10, prime time on WGBB.
Prime time?
7 to 10 p.m.
You
had
all the
time.
You had a very
that.
Big Long Island Jewish accent.
You don't get more primer than at a hardware store. That was terrible. But you know what's not terrible? Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine is not
good.
They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway, and you can see them shine off Broadway too. And if you love the theater scene, you need this special magazine. Performing Arts Insider is for you. Everything you want to know about theater, cabaret, opera, and dance, 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511 or performingartsinsider.com. We are back with Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By on this June 3rd. You have one more week, as I said before, to catch a lovely show downtown called Spalding Gray, Stories Left to Tell. I'm sorry I waited so long to see it, but I was so busy catching some Broadway things that I kind of let it pass. And did you ever see Spalding Gray do his monologues?
Yes, I did.
You don't seem like you were a fan.
No.
Why not?
I don't know. He was kind of an odd gentleman.
Well, duh.
And I'm not really crazy about monologues and stuff like that. And
generally, they have their limitations for me too. But he was special.
Yeah, he was entertaining at points, but you know when they got beyond the hour 30 mark, it was like, you know,
they almost never got beyond the hour 30.
Yeah,
mark.
They did.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't feel like. I mean, he helped me most of the time whenever I saw him, and when he was really good, I could watch him for almost 2 hours. And here, what they do is they chop up pieces from all his different writings, both the published stuff, the unpublished, from his novels, and they cut them up among different actors, some of them pretty famous, like the cast that I saw included Charles Bush, he was kind of the guest star, Lisa Kron from the Five Lesbian Brothers, Frank Wood, the Tony winner from Sideman, and Hazel Goodman, the actress. And each one kind of took a not just bits from his life, but from his parts of his life and personality. Like Lisa Kron would do his sex life and his romantic life, and Charles Bush was doing his career and telling about the ridiculous things he would go through when he'd go to meet agents that would promise him all these things with his career and try to get a take on who he was and how to cast him. And it really put together this piece of a life from fragments into a man who was really talented, certainly a bit troubled, and then towards the end it gets pretty damn dark. You know what happened to him, of course.
He walked away.
Yeah, well,
he did.
Down. He just plunged into the Hudson. He tried it once. They rescued him. Tried again. They did not.
Well, did they ever find his body?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, they did.
Like 2 months later. So he was a troubled man. What happened was he was troubled, conquered it, then a terrible car accident in Ireland that really messed up his face. It messed him up worse, and he never got over that. And within 2 years, he said, I'm leaving this world.
His life story is very sad.
Yeah.
But, you know, and his writings are good. Like I said, I just am not. I'm not a big fan of a one person show.
But this is not a one person show. This
I know.
A bunch of people, and it doesn't. Most of the time, it doesn't feel like a monologue. They cut it up enough
because it's telling you a real story too.
And the arc of his life, and then of course at the end, they go through it, and it's really you're feeling ugh. And they show a clip of him towards the end of a very happy moment in his life, and you see him dancing around with a little boombox, and it's just really touching. So, go see Spalding Gray. Stories Left to Tell.
You'll laugh again.
You really will. You absolutely will.
That's what I'm telling you.
Now, speaking of laughing and crying, someone who, well, mostly gave us laughter. We lost a Broadway person this past week. Charles Nelson Reilly died last Sunday, May 27th, age 76, of pneumonia. But
he'll best be known, actually, for his television roles, probably. For the Ghost of Mrs. Muir and all the times on Hollywood Square.
And Match Game, of course.
And Match Game with his good friend Brett Summers.
Well, that was the thing. He was like the Paul Lynde kind of character. Mm-hmm. He was out without being told. I mean, well, or was he out?
Course he was.
I mean, unashamedly.
Absolutely.
Unabashedly.
Absolutely.
Well, that was before.
But he didn't come out, he never came out and said, I'm gay, but he said everything that alluded to it.
Right, as did, again, the Poland kind of character, but a less prickly, much more likable fellow. My biggest disappointment.
Poland was likable?
Well, apparently he was a very spiky personality off the.
I like Poland, too.
Well, no, on TV.
But Charles Nelson Reilly was, I actually saw him a couple times on Broadway. He was a very big fan of Broadway, and he was at a lot of press performances.
Oh, you saw him visiting Broadway?
Yes.
As
a matter of fact, I told you the one time I was watching something at the Circle in the Square, and at intermission, Paul Lynde and not Poland, Charles Nelson Reilly and Gene Rayburn saw each other from opposite sides of the theater and ran down the aisle and gave a big hug and kiss in the middle of the, you know, the stage.
That's lovely.
It was really quite nice.
Did you see The Life of Reilly?
No, I didn't.
He did this one-person show only about 3 years ago, all about his life, and I was kind of thinking about going to see it. It sounded good, but they said it was actually, you're talking about monologues going past 90 minutes. I read the reviews, and it said it was 3 hours long. And I like Charles Nelson Reilly, but 3 hours of him alone, I don't think I can deal with that.
It kind of scares you, doesn't it?
Apparently they filmed it, but I can't find it on... There's a film of it,
well,
but nobody's showing it.
There has to be a film of it in the Lincoln Center.
The library thing might have it, but I'm saying they actually filmed it like they did the Bogosian plays, or a movie kind of film. So hopefully that'll come out, especially... Now, let's remind everybody that Charles Nelson Reilly was a Tony winner for How to Succeed in Business for playing Bud Frump.
And he did the same role in the movie, didn't he?
I
believe he did.
I don't know. Forgive me for not knowing that. He did do, one of the other things that's so wonderful about Googling, he did a comedy album with Robert Morse called A Jolly Theatrical Season. I would love to give a listen to that, where they goof on the songs of the season and make fun of them. Of that, probably that year of How to Succeed.
1940 what?
No, that would have been 50s already, I believe. Mm-hmm. Did you know that he was Gene Rayburn's understudy in Bye Bye Birdie when they first met? That's when he first met Gene Rayburn.
So they're friends.
They really go back. He was on The Tonight Show over 100 times, and he said the lesson in life that he knew was be whom you need to be, live your life by your own terms, find your niche. Actually, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what his life meant to me. I happen to be straight, I happen to be whatever, but learning from him, go and, you know, he wasn't a leading man. He was an okay singer, he had kind of an odd voice, but he made what he had work for him in all different ways.
He was a comic actor
who
became a character himself.
Yeah, and he let it all work for him. Let's hear how he got the part of the role for How to Succeed, and also we're going to hear him sing a bit of The Company Way from the original cast album of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying on Inside Broadway.
I was in Bye Bye Birdie for 2 years, and I had three parts. I was my own part of Mr. Henkel. I played for Paul Lynde every Thursday night because he had a contract with the Perry Como Show, which was live. So for one night a week, I was a star. And then I played the lead of Dick Van Dyke's part about 50 times because he always was out. They couldn't find anyone to play Bud Frump. They auditioned everybody in New York. They couldn't find anybody. And Robert Morse kept saying to Abe and Frank, see my friend, Charles. Who's Charles? I'm sorry. Who is he? So by the process of elimination, I was the last to audition. And I was dancing then in Bye Bye Birdie, put on a happy face with a lot of tippy taps. Our champion. It was a true tap number up and down stairs. I was petrified. I finally learned it, and I did it very well. So I auditioned with that number. I was supposed to have the two girls come with me, but they couldn't come because they got busy or they had appointments. So I had to dance the number, and I put a towel around my neck, and I had my tap shoes on from the show. And I put the towel around the neck because Bob Fosse always had a towel around the neck. I thought it'd make me look more dancery. So I danced, put on a happy face. And I told them what the girls were doing on either side while I was doing Put on a Happy Face. The audition for How to Succeed was at the L'Enfantin Theater. And the L'Enfantin Theater had housed for 9 years, at that time, I think, The Sound of Music. So I'm doing my audition, tapping away, telling how the two girls are, singing Put on a Happy Face. And every time I got near the walls or the back wall, I would sing something from Sound of Music because it had played there so long the music was in the wall. So I would go, great skies, the hills are alive. And I would tap back and put on a happy face. You know, stick out a pleasant outlook. Go, a female deer. And the whole thing was so maniac because I was petrified. But it came across as funny. This insane young person was doing three things at once. And it worked to be a very funny audition. And they came running on the stage, and Frank said, thank God we found you, because now I know how to write the song. And Abe Burrows said, now I know what to do with the book.
I'll play it the company way. Wherever the company puts me, there I'll stay. Whatever my uncle may think, I think so too.
Ooh, him is with company pride.
I've conquered that over-ambitious rat inside.
Old Bart is no longer the frump he used to be.
I pledge to the company's sweet conformity.
Hooray, hooray!
I will someday earn my medal. 25-year employee. I'll see to it that the medal is the only thing they'll ever pin on me.
The company is the company way. Executive policy is okay.
I'll never be president, but there's one thing clear. As long as my uncle can stand me, I will still be here.
We know the company can hide for nothing.
I'm so proud.
We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TogleTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. You don't have to pay big bucks on Broadway to enjoy a funny play. You could sit in the comfort of your living room, or bedroom, and read a whole book of hilarious comedies by the one and only me, Dave Lefkowitz, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with my unique humor, satire, and spoofery. If you like my show, you'll love my book, $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Buy it at davesgoneby.org, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. That says it all, doesn't it?
What gives it to me every hour?
Saturday night at 11, the place to be is right at your computer, because DFSXRadio.com plays vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By. That's right, two different episodes Saturday nights at 11. And all you gotta do is go to my website, davesgoneby.org, for all the links to DFSX Radio, which is part of live365.com. So be there, or be square, with DFSX.
For the eggs, Jason. The bride, the wise and dark pigeon, are the steeple bell. The dog's just the garbage that's overlapped. And there's always construction work bothering me.
Got a pistol on the register.
one of the greatest living songwriters, I think, and probably not just me, is Tom Waits. He evolved from being kind of a grungy, beat-style folky into someone who made some of the most beautiful, romantic, and torchy, and sad songs ever, into someone who also ended up doing experimental and crunchy and avant-garde and Beefheart-esque music. And now he's been combining all three types for the past few years, and usually in such brilliant and extraordinary ways that every new album is a discovery. And someone who has spent the past couple of years discovering Waits is J.S. Jacobs, who's written a biography of Mr. Waits, The Wild Years, The Music and Myth of Tom Waits. It's published by ECW Books, and I've been reading it and having a good time reading it and going over the life and times and music of this great performer. So I wanted to just get into it with Mr. Jacobs, who's on the phone with us in the neighborhood. How you doing, Jay?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
You're very, very welcome. So you did a book about Chuckie Weiss, I think.
I didn't do a book about him. I did an interview with him a while back for an article, but I've never done a book on.
Oh, okay. Because I noticed in the book that you had talked to him.
Talked to him back in 1999 when I was first getting involved with writing the Waits book, and I also that was about the time that Chuck's first real album came out. He had released one thing back in the 80s, which was not, it was sort of put out against his will. It was a bunch of demos, but he's sort of been a legendary live player for many years, he'd never really recorded before that. So he finally put something out in 99, which Waits actually sang on and produced a couple of the tracks. So that was when I interviewed him.
Why did you want to do a book about Waits as opposed to just enjoying his music or writing an article or two?
Well, actually, I am a very big fan of his and have been for many years, but the publishers actually came to me. At the time, I was writing a bunch of different liner notes for Rhino Records, which is part of the Warner Brothers chain, and mm-hmm. I was working on a two-disc set, Four Waits, that ended up never coming out. It was eventually sort of cut down into a single-disc set and called Used Songs, but Waits decided he didn't want the two-disc set out there.
Okay.
And somehow the publishers found out about me and contacted me and wanted to know if I'd be interested in doing a book. So I said, sure.
Yeah, your previous music book was a biography of Tori Amos.
That's actually a newer book than the Tom Waits book. That came out this summer. It's called Pretty Good Years.
So going to the Waits thing, what was the toughest thing about doing the biography of him?
Well, it's just, it was a lot of different things, but I mean, for the most part, it was just the fact that Tom Waits is such a private person in a lot of ways. So, and you can tell through his interviews, he's built up this huge mythology about his life, which is fascinating and fun to read and all, but there are so many basically contradicting stories about what has happened in his life at different points and everything. You can read five different interviews about the same thing and get five different stories about what exactly happened,
right.
Which was sort of why when I was writing the book, I decided to actually make that a part of the actual biography.
Yeah, that is one of the more fun things about it, where you will quote him from various different interviews talking completely, like, off the cuff. I mean, these hilarious random things are coming out of his mouth. And there's maybe a kernel of truth in it, which he embroiders with 10,000 kernels of nonsense. And
right.
It's as fun to read the nonsense as it is to know what the truth might have sort of been.
Mm-hmm. And whenever possible, I did get that information. Unfortunately, Tom, I did contact him and tried to get him more actively involved with the book, but there was a book that came out back in the 1980s, a biography called Small Change, and he was really not happy with the way that came out, so he decided he did not want to be too involved with the writing of the book. So,
but he didn't block your book.
Absolutely not. In fact, I spoke with his manager, and his manager actually was very, very nice about it and everything. He said, look, he actually did go to Tom and talk to him for me, and he said, look, I just know that this is probably not something that Tom is going to be willing to get involved with because he is such a private person. But
a lot of the best autobiographical stuff that you have in the book is basically from one apparently amazing interview that he did with Morning Becomes Eclectic, this long California radio program.
Right. There are actually about three different ones that came from the K-Rock Morning Becomes Eclectic things that we were luckily allowed to use. K-Rock was very nice to allow us to use those. Rolling Stone gave us access to some other things. A writer named Barney Hoskins, who's interviewed him quite a few times, was able to do that. And, of course, I was able to interview a lot of different people who have worked with Tom over the years, too.
Who did you actually get to talk to first person?
I spoke with quite a few people. I spoke with Bone Howe, who produced seven of his CDs. I spoke with Jerry Yester, who produced his first CD. I spoke with David Geffen, who obviously the head of the record label that signed him. And I spoke briefly with Francis Ford Coppola, who's done movies with him, and Joe Mantegna, who was in a movie with him. So I was able to definitely talk with different people. And even I did talk with Chuck as well, although because Chuck is a close friend, I agreed to keep most of his stuff out of there because he said, well, if Tom's not involved, I really probably shouldn't be either. So all the quotes that I really used of Chuck's were really about Chuck's music and Chuck's life more than Tom.
What were some of the most surprising things that you learned about Tom Waits from doing the book?
Well, there are a lot of things. I mean, I think probably the most surprising thing was talking with many of the people who worked with Tom in the early years when he was sort of fostering this feeling that he was hitting the bars and everything and just a nightlife type of person, was that he was never quite as into that as he led everyone to believe. He was never quite as bad a drinker as everyone believed or anything. He certainly would do that, but Jerry Yester, who produced his first album, Closing Time, said early on he tried doing it and he realized, you know, it was taking a little too much hold and he sort of snapped out of it. So he certainly was living the life, but he wasn't quite living the life as much as you would think. And then also the fact that when he totally got out of that lifestyle got sane and sober and was married and having kids and everything, his music became even more eclectic than it was, which is usually the other way around. Usually when you're experimenting is when you do the more avant-garde type of stuff. And he sort of turned it the other way around.
Ah, fine wine, great books, priceless antiques. All that's missing is something to listen to. But of course, episodes of Dave's Gone By, the music, the comedy, the perceptive talk, entire shows preserved on compact disc. Any episode you choose, just $11, shipping included. No home is complete without Dave's Gone By on CD. So visit davesgoneby.org because you're worth it. We're talking with J.S. Jacobs, author of Wild Years, The Music and Myth of Tom Waits, which is from ECW Press. And people can get this book basically everywhere.
Yeah.
Barnes & Noble as well as on the internet.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon.com, pretty much everywhere carries it.
What happened, and this is what I really kind of want to know. I mean, he had sort of a gruff, rough-hewn voice in the first two albums.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he obviously wasn't crooning. He was no Perry Como.
Right.
And yet, you could sort of mistake him for another John Prine type.
Right.
What happened between that and Small Change that took him from sounding like to
Well, I think that to a large extent it was just a stylistic choice. I think that he just really was fascinated by the old blues man and that type of sound, and just felt more lived into him and felt more like the types of songs that he was recording. Gave him more of the sense of the hard life live in and everything. And
do you think he'd actually go back to the old voice at this point? If he had any desire to?
I don't know if he could do it per se, but you'd be surprised in the later album some of the different experiments he does with his voice. He'll sing falsetto and stuff like that. So he definitely does have a range of singing. I don't think that he'd ever go back to the original, just sort of
the folky,
like you said, sort of a folky thing, just because he doesn't really like looking back that much. And I think that early, or probably around the 80s or so, he got kind of very bored with that type of music that he was doing and decided that he wanted to be more out there, not less out there. He's also very heavily involved with found sounds and awkward sounds and how they can be beautiful in music. And
I love that story where years earlier he had been in a Mexican hotel room,
yes,
and was just making, I guess, some beat noise, banging on the thing, ba ba ba. And 5 years later, he's like, you know, I can put that with the song Big in Japan.
Right.
And he did. You know, he had the sound with him, and he just put it together, and it makes the song. You know, although I you don't really mention how the Mexican hotel reacted to his trashing a piece of their furniture.
Exactly. Well, I'm certain that they made him pay for it, because he apparently pretty much destroyed the piece of furniture. But I guess he figured in the long run it ended up working out well for him. And you hear some of these different things that other rock stars do in hotels, so maybe it's not too bad comparatively.
Grace, got the clothes, got the face, got the grace.
buy, buy. Look at me. I'm the American consumer, and I want to spend my money on stores, restaurants, showrooms, travel agencies, mail order catalogs. Sell me stuff. How do you reach me? Well, I listen to Dave's Gone By. So, if you advertise there, you'll certainly have my attention. Dave'sGoneBy.org has all the details, or email Dave'sGoneBy@AOL.com for the rate card. I'm listening. Sell me what you got. We're talking with Jay Jacobs, author of The Wild Years, The Music and Myth of Tom Waits. And we're just talking about the behavior of rock stars and what they do and how they sell out, and which Tom Waits obviously has tried vehemently not to do. And you seem to certainly agree with him in the pages of the book. You seem to agree very fully with Waits that that's just not the way to go.
Yeah, that's definitely something that he has been very, very vehement about his entire career. And nowadays, pretty much everyone else does it. There are very few people who refuse, like Waits, to get involved with it. But it's just something that he's always felt was just basically selling out his music and selling out his legacy. He's very, very involved in the purity of what he's doing. He doesn't want what he's doing to seem like it is something that is just a fluke or for no particular reason. So he really stays very involved with keeping that type of thing out of it. Now, occasionally, even his music has been used as recorded by other people, and even then, he will sue against that. One of his earlier songs, Heart Attack and Vine, which is...
Well, that's actually mid-time. That was already...
Yeah, that was 1980. Yeah. That came out. It's still owned... It's actually... when I say earlier, I mean the... Electra Asylum years stuff that are still owned by Herb Cohen, who is his former manager. He does not have control over them.
Mm-hmm.
But Levi's in Europe had released an ad with Screaming Jay Hawkins, who actually was a friend of Waits.
I believe it.
Had recorded it. And he just sued them and was... He didn't really get much money for it, but he got an apology and everything. And, of course, the most famous thing was Frito-Lay. When they were making a commercial for a corn chip called Salsa Rio Doritos, they had tried to hire Waits, and Waits turned them down like he turns down everyone. And they hired a guy who sounded exactly like him and did a song which they claimed was a sort of an homage to him rather than an actual Waits song. They were had originally wanted to use his song Step Right Up, and it was a song that sounded like Step Right Up, but it wasn't Step Right Up. And he ended up suing them and becoming very rich because of that, too.
And it's funny that it wouldn't fall, I guess it doesn't fall into the realm of parody, in which case it would be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
For comic or satirical purposes, but because it was used really for sales and to drive money, and for which Waits would not be a participant, then the judge, I guess, was right.
Right. Well, it was the beginning of what is called the Lanham Act. He and actually Bette Midler about the same time had the same thing, where it basically just said that you couldn't sort of hijack the personality of a performer. I mean, Frito-Lay tried to argue that not enough people knew who Tom Waits was, but as the judge said at the time, well, first of all, he said it's pretty obvious that a lot of people do know who he is, but still he said, but you can't just let that be, or then anyone who's not a huge star could just be open to having their voice or their style just sort of stolen. So luckily he was able to get that done. But it still happens to this day. He just went through the exact same thing with Audi in Europe, and to this day you'll still hear things like that.
Good rider. Zip battles. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's why you two can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before the name goes on. One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady. $3-4. We got a year-end clearance. We got our white sale and a smoke-damaged furniture you can drive on the way today. Act now, and receive as our gift to you. They come in all colors, one size fits all. No muss, no fuss, no spills. You tired of kitchen drudgery? Everything must go. Going out of business, going out of business, going out of business sale. 50% off original retail price. Skip the middle man. Don't settle for less. How do we do it? How do we do it? Volume, volume. Turn up the volume.
And the funny thing is, too, just in the past year or so, it came out that in the very early 80s, when Waits was leaving Warner Brothers and getting sort of a professional divorce from Herb Cohen, who was his original manager, and sort of, well, let's just say he didn't give Waits a very good business deal. He sort of got a lot of money off of Waits, and Waits didn't get much back for it. But he actually did record a commercial himself, although it was a voiceover. It wasn't a musical commercial, but he did a dog food commercial where he did the voices, and turned out it was a very famous commercial. It had been there for all those years, and he even sort of mentioned it off the cuff in one interview, but didn't really go into it, and no one really knew about it or remembered it for many years. And then last year, the guy who had written the commercial originally recorded it, put it on eBay and tried to sell it, and they eventually, like, Waits apparently contacted him, and they worked something out where he's just sent it to Waits and gave it to him.
And became a very rich man, probably.
I don't know if any money was involved with that. I'm sure that there was probably some, but it didn't sound like the guy was trying to hold up Waits. He just thought he had an interest in collectible there.
Yeah. Well, rock my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rock my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rock my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, mortgagesrock.com. God has a plan for you, giving your friends and family mortgage loans. Learn how at mortgagesrock.com. Fully licensed in New York State and in heaven. They'll teach you the ropes so you can climb Jacob's ladder to high, high, high commissions. Rock my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rock my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rock my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Everybody point and click.
Hi, this is Jay Jacobs. I'm the author of Wild Years, The Music and Myth of Tom Waits. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Speaking of, well, your Tom Waits collection, do you have a favorite Waits album?
I actually do, which is not one that most people would, but I guess because it's the first time that I discovered him, it just has always been a favorite of mine. It is the soundtrack to the movie One from the Heart, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
That was the first time that I had that I was introduced to Waits' music in 1982, when that was out. I was in New York with my father, and we decided to go see a movie, and we saw that. And that was the first time I'd really heard of Tom Waits. I mean, at that point, I was still pretty young, and was still more into stuff like Duran Duran and stuff like that. So to this day, that still probably is my favorite overall album of his, although I love most of his albums, and I will listen to all of them from throughout the spectrum, but that one probably is the one that I like the most.
I mean, I don't even have that one on CD at this point, but I do remember liking the song Take Me Home.
Yeah,
Crystal Gayle, I mean, she sings it for
right, exactly.
She, beautiful song.
She sang a few songs and then did a few duets with her, and they're with him, and there are a couple of songs that they do together called Breaking Up With You and this one's From the Heart, which are just really, truly beautiful songs.
What is your favorite Waits song?
You know, I'm not sure that I could do that down to just one. I mean,
My feelings about that change with great regularity. I mean, I love a lot of them. Things like Jackie Full of Bourbon, Till the Money Runs Out, Hang on, St. Christopher, Time. There are just so many.
It's interesting.
Sure.
You kind of go for some of the more raucous, kind of bluesy, rocky numbers.
Yes.
And I probably go for more of the ballads.
I love many of the ballads, too, believe me. Those are just some that just came to the top of my head right now.
No, that's totally cool. Have you heard the new trilogy?
Yes,
that came out. It's called Orphans.
Yes.
Was it Brawlers, Ballers, and Bastards?
Mm-hmm.
Three CDs, one of which is, as I said, the rocky kind of growly songs. One of the Ballers would be mostly ballads.
Right.
And the Bastards, I guess, are sort of orphan songs from different places.
Right, exactly. They're his sort of more experimental type of thing.
What do you think of the set as a whole?
I think it's a terrific set. It's got a lot of good music. I knew most of the earlier songs. I think they're about, 30 of the songs are new. The rest are older songs that had been on compilations or soundtrack albums or stuff. So I knew most of those, and it was good to have those all in one place, although I had many of them in different ways. I probably would say of the new album, I like the Ballers the most, and then the Brawlers. The Bastards, I think, probably would be my least favorite of the three discs. But
that could change in a month.
That's true. That's true. These things grow on you differently.
I guess the other question is, are you a Blood Money person or an Alice person?
I actually prefer Alice.
Me too. Oh, yeah. Totally. We're talking with Jay Jacobs, author of Wild Years, The Music and Myth of Tom Waits. Been really fun talking to you. I guess before I let you go, I should ask, you said your new book, the book that most recently came out, is a biography of Tori Amos?
Yes, that's correct.
Is that authorized? Did you talk to her?
No, that is, again, unfortunately unauthorized.
You've got to pick more accessible people.
Yeah. Well, I did speak with her people, and I was contacted to do the book, and when I contacted her people, they were actually very nice about it, but she was already started on the book piece by piece at that point. But I have interviewed her several times in the past, and I was able to interview other people as well.
Is that also ECW Press?
No, that one's on Hal Leonard's book.
The music publisher.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, cool. Now, what are you working on after that?
Mostly I'm working as the editor and publisher of thepopentertainment.com, which is a pop culture website, a magazine. We interview all sorts of different people, and I have been basically thinking of different ideas for books, but nothing has really grabbed me quite yet, so I figure, well, I'm not going to do something just to do it. I want it to be something that I'm passionate about.
I don't know if there's a good Captain Beefheart book yet, so
while he's
still alive, go to the desert, find him.
That's right.
Anyway, thank you very, very much, Jay Jacobs, for being with us in not in the neighborhood, but the Daverhood, we call
right.
it here. So, best of luck with the Waits book, with the Tori Amos book, and whatever projects you've got coming up, as well as popentertainment.com. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you very much.
And the Tony Award goes to? Well, if you want to know about all the Tony action, listen Monday night, June 4th, to WGBB's third annual Tony Award special. We'll play show tunes, ask the experts their predictions, we'll be giving away prizes, and even talking to Tony nominees. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, host of Dave's Gone By. Please join me 7 to 10 p.m. on Monday, June 4th, for the Tony Award special on AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your Broadway community.
Hi, this is Jay Jacobs, author of Wild Years, The Music and Myth of Tom Waits. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're back for the final minute or two of Dave's Gone By, pushing into Monday, June 4th, the big Monday.
Don't forget, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. later, just about, whatever it is, 20 hours from now. Jeff and I and Simon Saltzman will...
19 hours, Dave.
You caught it right there. On this station, the WGBB Tony Award Special, with Tony nominees Bill T. Jones, the choreographer for Spring Awakening, and Rebecca Luker, who's in Mary Poppins, plus a bunch of critics giving their predictions, all that kind of good stuff.
If you tune in, you can see how wrong a critic can be.
Exactly. All you got to do is read them to figure that one out. Hey, let's very quickly thank our sponsors. Performing Arts Insider, Theater Magazine.
The Bible of Broadway.
MortgagesRock.com.
And they really do. Earn some money from your friends, earn some money from yourself.
I don't even know what that means.
By writing everyone a mortgage.
There you go. Hewlett Minuteman Press.
We'll be giving away 40% discount.
No, they will not. No, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Don't forget, they're right across from Lohmann's and next to Lohmann Shoes.
That is correct. And finally, Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Never heard of them.
Okay. Jeff has never heard of them, but he happens to own the company and be the company. So if you have a bar mitzvah, a catering thing, a christening thing.
And be the company and be the company.
There you go. It's 516-797-3229 for all your party needs. I want to thank Jeff Goodman for being here tonight. Thank you for my wonderful and delightful wife, Joyce Weil, as always, for her love and support. Going to get out of here, but really have to do a couple of...
Give a shout-out to your parents.
Shout-out to Mom and Dad. A couple of other quick shout-outs. On June 6th, this coming Wednesday morning, 7:30 in the morning, listening for me on WVTL up in upstate New York on the Bob Cudmore Show. He's having me back on to talk Tonys. That's 1570 WVTL.com. Also look for me in a week or two or three on PBS TV's Theater Talk with the one and only Michael Riedel of all people. So that's kind of scary and exciting. Dave on television.
And watch. Don't forget DFSX Radio.
That's right, yes. You can hear two back-to-back episodes of Dave's Gone By every Saturday night at 11, two episodes on dfsxradio.com. All the information is on my website, davesgoneby.org, and you can listen any time of day, 24/7, for free, to 25 vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By at theaterpod.com. Again, the link is at davesgoneby.org.
Well, what a great way to spend a whole day. 25 episodes right in a row.
It's a good way to put yourself in a rubber room. Speaking of rubber rooms, we've got some amazing guests also coming up in the weeks ahead. We've got the widow of Warren Zevon, one of the craziest rock stars ever. I'm reading the bio that she wrote of him. It's completely out there and nuts. You got to hear this. She'll be on in a week or two. We also have the leading authority or best-selling author on casino gambling in America coming here on Dave's Gone By.
And Cher's coming by.
And who?
Share?
Well, only if you'll be sharing food.
Okay, well, it's fine.
Anyway, normally when I close the show, I say, well, we'll be back next Sunday, blah, blah, blah. But no, we will be back tomorrow, Monday, June 4th, 2007.
As if you didn't get enough of us already.
For the third annual WGBB Tony Awards special. Come on back here, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night. Special theatrics and theatrical specials
gone by.